Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is, the end of January, January 31st. This month, I don't know, for me, it felt like this month flew by like a rocket.
The fastest January I've ever been a part of, personally.
Yeah, because January, like I said, usually just drags, and you know, it has been cold and all that for sure. We got our first blizzard, well, semi blizzard, I guess, a few days ago. So the weather part of it has been official. Like, it's been cold as shit in New York. It's been like routinely at nighttime in the 13s, 10s, 12s, 15s. But I don't know. It just flew by to me. I don't know why. I know, maybe it's a lot of stuff going on, you know. Nye's working on some stuff, so she's going to try to pop in, but she's got a deadline to finish, so we'll see if she pops in or not. First thing I guess I want to talk about is breaking news. Rihanna is, as my mother used to say, with child.
Rihanna got to buy the baby bubble coat now.
Yeah. But so there's been a little stomach punch, for lack of a better term, for a couple months now. And people have been, you know, wondering if she is pregnant, but they finally revealed it. I'm sure she did also, like a lot of women do, which is want to reveal it later out of the danger zone of those first, you know, three months or so when things, you know, are very touch and go. And so now I guess they're more comfortable. She looks to be actually way more than 3 months pregnant, but I guess she just wanted to get to a space where everything was cool and, you know, she was good and there weren't any complications, which it's not our business regardless, but I totally understand that she wanted to wait that long. So her and A$AP Rocky are with child. Don't know. They haven't revealed the due date yet, but, you know, God bless her, man. I mean, she's, you know, she's got a lot of money. She's got a lot of businesses. She's doing very well. You know, Rocky's riding his wave, you know, and they seem to be in love and serious. And, you know, she'd be in Harlem. She'd be in Harlem all the time. She'd be in Harlem regularly, like on the low, like just with Rocky, just hanging out, going to spots, going to eat, going here, going there. So I'm assuming they have a crib up there. But, you know, God bless them, man. God bless them. And the Twitter timeline is a buzz.
I appreciate the very Harlem maternity reveal pics, like under an overpass, like in traffic. That's very,
I
appreciate it.
Yeah, like where else would you do them but over there on 12th Avenue? You know what I'm saying? Like that's where it is. You know, that's what you do. So God bless them. I wanted to mention also, and you probably know more about this, Inca, than I do. The young lady who allegedly committed suicide.
Yes, Miss USA 2019, Chesley, I'm spacing on her last name right now, was apparently found on a sidewalk after jumping from a Manhattan high rise,
where she lived. She lived on one of you know them joints on 42nd Street. Like what, 10th Avenue or so. I think she lived in there. She lived in those.
She had a beautiful apartment. We've seen it on TikTok.
They have a observation deck, like kind of like on the 25th, I think, for a 29th floor. We can kind of go chill and, you know, in the summertime and get sun. And she went up to there and allegedly jumped off. I don't know what the reasons are, you know, I mean. But, you know, God bless her and her family. You know, I didn't know about this young lady until this happened, but she seemed to be well liked and she was on, you had a nice career path going. And,
I think she was a lawyer or a
lawyer. Yeah, she was a lawyer.
She gave amazingly insightful content, you know, for all intents and purposes from outside looking in. She was like an it girl. So. Yeah. It's kind of shocking, especially to the social community that's like
Yeah, like what the hell? Yeah, yeah. Chelsea, I think her last name is pronounced Christ.
Christ, yes.
Yeah, Chesley Christ. Yeah. So, just wanted to mention that. Didn't want to dwell on it, but it's a horrible, horrible incident. One other thing I just read before we got on here, which was apparently the three guys who killed Ahmaud Arbery did a backdoor plea deal so they would spend their life sentence in federal prison and not in Georgia prison, which would have been a lot more harsher. And they did this unbeknownst to the family, Ahmaud Arbery's family. I don't know if his lawyers even knew about it. Apparently, it was just like a backdoor deal to, you know, to protect the white man, as always. You know,
I think it was they pled out on the hate crime part of the
charges, so the hate crimes part,
so that they wouldn't have to be in the, which is insane to me. This was, if this isn't a hate crime, what is a hate crime?
But I think by them pleading, it just means that the federal statute overtakes the state statute.
Right.
Mm.
So
I mean, but even accepting a plea there is insanity to me.
I mean, they're all, by and large, they're going to take a plea. You know, like the idea of the courts is to take a plea. Like, the courts don't necessarily want to, particularly for guys, I'm sure, who are cash strapped. I don't think that these guys had deep pockets and were able to put up defenses, right? So now you're dealing with public defenders and, you know, just kind of jamming up and logging up the courts and not really processing this. So it's fairly common, I believe, for people to take deals like this. I don't necessarily know that federal prison is not going to be as harsh as Georgia prison. From what I understand, you know, federal prison ain't no motherfucking cakewalk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because they're not like, you're not really separated. Like, you know, I had a friend of mine, he was like, yeah, a motherfucker might be doing 5 years and he might be in there with motherfuckers doing 35 years.
Yeah, three life sentences.
He's never coming home. And he don't care if he cut your throat.
Yeah, because
he's whatever. Never coming home.
Yeah, exactly. I'm locked in.
So, you know, at least that's what it seems like.
Yeah, the issue is that Ahmaud's family didn't know, and they for whatever reason wanted them to be in Georgia. They didn't want them to be in this. I don't know, but you know, it seems like this is kind
but
of
they happened. May but that, that's the thing is they still may be in Georgia.
In
they
Fed just prison. May
be in a federal prison
I got
in
you.
Georgia.
I got you. I
There's
got
no guarantee. It's his family. Ultimately, what is supposed to happen is, like, the state is saying, you committed a crime against the state and you owe the state this time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what there's like, you did this to a Georgia resident in Georgia. You owe Georgia this time. You're supposed to do this time in the state penitentiary.
Yeah.
And the federal government kind of supersedes what that is. Like, that's just the case. You know, even with that plea, I don't think they're going to come up for parole.
No. It's life without parole. They're never coming up for parole.
Yeah, they're never coming home.
And I know in certain cases, I guess it all depends, but I know when you get into that federal system, I know they be just moving niggas at the drop of a dime. Like, you'll be in Colorado and then one day they'll just knock on your shit and then you in Illinois and your family don't even know where you are because they just moving you. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, you'll know if you get a letter.
Yeah, exactly.
If you get, and that's a part of, particularly for, I would have to assume they're going to a maximum security prison.
Oh yeah,
it's
yeah,
not yeah. going to be, you know, dude,
the golf course
finishing side, out the, 2 years yeah. and they doing taking gardening classes. Ain't nobody, yeah. you know, they're going to be in you know, in flyover places with real tall buildings. I mean, real tall walls and. Yeah. They only going to see birds.
That's barely.
Now, the DA that they charged, when is...
I don't know when her shit is... Yeah, I don't know when her shit is coming up. I would assume pretty soon, though. But I'm not sure. I haven't been following.
I'm really interested in what's going to happen with that.
Yeah. Let's do... So what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen, is we're definitely going to speak about the Janet documentary because it was compelling. And... so, you know, interesting, and obviously we all grew up with the Jacksons, so we all had a vested interest in watching this. But because the documentary was kind of so dense, What we're going to do is we're going to break it up into four parts throughout the show. So we'll cover part one, part two, part three, four. We didn't want to kind of do it all at once. So before we go into part one, let's talk about what y'all watching. See, y'all thought I was going to forget. What y'all watching?
You go first, Sean.
I ain't really watching shit. I haven't. Okay. I mean, I've just been binging on, you know, rerun. I did started watching the We Need to Talk About Cosby.
Okay. Yeah, I got to watch that.
Same.
Documentary.
We'll cover that next week. Did you finish Veep yet?
Well, yeah, I did. I mean, I finished Veep. It was a cheesy, very, very cheesy ending.
Yeah, the ending was kind of trash.
Yeah, the ending was very lazy for such a smart television show. Mm. But I get it. You know, you want to put a nice bow on things, and that's just the way of the world. But
yeah,
the Cosby shit was just really, really interesting. Mm. Is a good word I'd like to say, because I've seen part one. I'm kind of in a very weird way. Part three came on and not part two. Mm. So I'm kind of like halfway through part three.
Okay.
I just found it very interesting how everyone just kept in the beginning of episode one, just kept using the word complex. They just kept saying, you know, this is a complex situation. And I'm just like, is it though? Is it complex?
Yeah.
Like, is it like, yes, he helped stuntmen break into, you know, show business, right? Like, so then.
Right, which was very interesting. I didn't know about that he did so much for black stuntmen to enter into Hollywood.
Yeah, this is, the thing is like a lot of the things that you're saying, when you're talking about those things that he did, are very on brand. Mm-hmm. You know, he famously gave money to Melvin Van Peebles to finish up Sweet Sweet Bad. Like, we know about his philanthropy. We know about those things.
Yeah.
There's nothing complex about it, right? It's like he was a fucking rapist. It's way more simpler than I think people are doing it. And they're using the word complex to kind of jive internally where they want to draw that line. Mm. And I understand that. And we talked about this a lot, like R. Kelly, particularly, and most recently, is that how does one, you know, listen to him knowing what they know now. And I think that was one of the bigger things, which is like, dude, I don't know that I could listen to this guy because the music is too in tune to the heinous shit that was going on.
Yeah, because the lyrics, so a lot of the lyrics and stuff.
There. Yeah.
And
so I don't necessarily know that it's this, I just don't think it's a complex situation. Okay. I think it was a nigga from Philly, got some money, being the nice black guy. He understood that role. He played it. He opened some doors that when he recognized he had power and he had the ability to do so, he opened doors for people, and that is fine and that is commendable. And thank you. You're also a fucking notorious rapist. Like a nasty and really a nasty, mean and vile fucking person.
Yeah.
And so audacious. I think just as people, we need to be able to reconcile the cultural contribution of someone and their heinous acts of inhumanity. Like, two things can exist in the same person.
But we have a problem as a people figuring that out, that two things can happen at the same
everything is either or. Yes, I love,
they're trying to bring the black man down.
Yo, I love James Brown. His contributions to music are immeasurable, right? When you take on all of the things that he's done, James Brown was also like notoriously harsh to people.
Yeah,
he was a mean son of a bitch. He was a woman abuser. He was a lot of things. Like, he was a lot of things. Yeah, like, we don't have to make him like, that's not complex to me.
Yeah, that don't mean that he didn't
open some doors. Like,
yeah, yeah.
So I'm only on episode one. I didn't know that they were screening extra episodes. I enjoy W. Kamau Bell to a certain extent, but he annoys me more than I enjoy him. So I'm kind of grateful that he's more behind the camera than in front of it, because his, even the way he interviews people sometimes can kind of get under my skin. I don't know exactly what it is about him, but like,
I almost cut it off when I saw old thick neck ass Roland.
Roland.
Oh my God. Roland, man.
It's wide leg pant, nigga. I'm finna turn this off, man. He had on his good Easter suit.
He ain't wear the Kente cloth hat. But
just a white shirt open with no fucking scarf under it. So we knew he was serious about this one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this was serious business for him.
But it was very informative.
It's actually really good. I think Kamau, while not a great comedian, does a pretty decent job in this space. And it looks like he got, I would have loved to seen a couple regular people, and I'm using air quotes there.
Yeah.
I just think that when we start to get into academia and like the right, you know, like professional writers and all of that shit, it's really, it's a lot of the same points of view.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that I want to see if it's missing is, you know, what that impact was with what we were going on, like what was reflected in the Cosby Show literally ignored what was happening in Black America as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there wasn't even a very special, like, the worst shit to happen was, like, Theo's boy put a joint in his book.
Yeah. And Vanessa got married to Agnes. Or wasn't
the old nigga Dabness, right?
Dabness.
Dabness Briggs.
Yeah. But like, this is the worst. And I'm not saying that I need, and I don't want to go off too long on this, but I'm not saying that I needed the Cosby Show to reflect that in their home, but to not even have the external component of what was happening in the world even touch their house was like fascinating to me.
Yeah. All right. So I'm watching this show on OWN called Ladies Who List. Did we talk about this, right? Ladies Who List. I think we talked about it at some point. Hey, Ivy. Ladies Who List is a show about these women in Atlanta who are into real estate. So there's two closing lawyers and four agents. Four agents. And they're selling real estate in Atlanta. But of course, because it's women, there's the cattiness and the mess or whatever. But I do like that. I'm not going to go deep on it, but I do like that this last episode they really didn't, but in other episodes they did. They show properties, so they're showing them actually working, you know, and closing deals, and you know, sitting at closings and all that.
Are you saying this in contrast to Selling Tampa?
I never saw Selling Tampa, but I've read that Selling Tampa.
You told me to watch that.
I did, but I just never tapped in. But I've read that Selling Tampa was never about houses.
It was
like there was just a lot of bullshit.
It was about houses, but we didn't see them close any deal except for the one older lady in the very beginning. She sold the house like in the first episode, but that's
Yeah. Anyway, so this one they're actually like closing deals and so on. So I'm watching that, and I was oddly compelled by and it came on right after Janet, which is why I watched it. I was oddly compelled by K. Michelle's show.
It was actually really, really good.
It was really good. I thought it was gonna be like, okay, here we go. But now it's really like
Does she address that she's doing this with a new face?
She doesn't talk about herself. She talks about her surgery. She doesn't say specifically I got a new face, but she talks about in the first episode, she talks about her surgeries because it was a black girl's telling about, because it's about a show about issues that you have, you know, getting plastic surgery, and how it's not just this cut and dry thing that people kind of put on Instagram. Like, I went to the doctor today and I got a new ass and now I'm Gucci gang. And they're like, nah, it'd be mad complications. And like, cause it's surgery. It's still surgery.
A little bit of it.
It was really squeamish for some of those. Now that was the thing I was going to say, the thing about the K. Michelle show, they showing you shit. Like, they not dancing around it. They are showing you scars and scabs and cuts.
Like an
and
open belly.
Open
the
wounds.
Tummy tuck.
Yeah,
not, I was like, I can't.
Yeah, they're showing you the surgeries. They're showing, like, they're really trying to
spaghetti.
Trying to deter women and younger girls from, like, doing this, like, on some willy-nilly shit.
Well, I don't know that they're trying to deter them.
They're just trying to let you know it ain't no joke.
Yes, and really sort of showing that, hey, man, there's another side of this and that these are the complications and these are things that can happen to you, even with all of your research, even with all of your thing. I mean, that's the thing about surgery. Again, you can have the best doctor in the world and something can go terribly wrong. And then
people's bodies are different. Like, if you had a gallbladder surgery, you might, you know, be cool in 2 weeks. I could have a gallbladder surgery. You can be laid out for 6 months because everybody's shit is different. Like, it's kind of like saying, just don't think it's like so cookie cutter. Like,
it's not one size fits all.
Yeah, like you're going to get your teeth cleaned. It ain't that. So it was oddly compelling. I'm gonna keep up with it. So let's talk about the first part of the Janet Jackson doc, Janet. It starts with Janet going back to Gary, Indiana for the first time since she was 8 years old. So I think they moved when she was five. So I don't know why they came back when she, you know, 3 years later, if it was a concert or song, maybe a dedication to a street or something, but Janet's 50s now. So it's been, you know, 40 something years since she had been back to Gary, and she meets Randy at the house, the 2300 Jackson Street house. It's now kind of, it's gated off. And I think I've read, it's kind of like the city deemed it like a landmark. So, you know, it's well.
I think it's like a low-key museum. Like, you can
like
go
a museum.
In there.
Yeah, which is why they...
I've also heard that someone lives there, like extended family. Like, they own the house. And someone actually lives there. Because when you looked at them go inside, like, that was a regular... That was a couch.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. There was a flat screen on the wall.
That's from Ashley, nigga. Like, that, you know... Like,
that's from Ray and Flanagan.
That's from Ray and Flanagan, nigga. I was like, oh, no, somebody lives there. Like, Like, that's the flour holder and the sugar holder. And like,
doilies on the...
But if you look on the walls, you see this pictures of the Jackson. So there's probably a family member who has, whatever. Because, I mean, it must be tough for somebody to live there because people are just pulling up there probably all day and night, every day. But anyway, so she goes in the house and Randy kind of, you know, talks about, you know, how the house was set up. And it's a two-bedroom house, and there were 11 of them. Two parents, obviously, and nine siblings. So they were like stacked high in bunk beds and all over the place. And the girls slept on the sofa. And, you know, I guess, you know, mom and dad had their room. Miss Catherine and Mr. Joe had their room. And they just, you know, talked about how, you know, small the house was. And they start the story of how Mr. Joe was, you know, how Tito broke the guitar string. And, you know, as we know from the Jacksons movie, and, you know, Mr. Joe came home and he was pissed, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, he saw there was some talent there and they started to develop it. Was one thing that I would really find interesting. So Janet obviously was so small and Randy was very young. Randy said, though, the guys that he knew back then in Gary are all like dead or in jail. So Mr. Joe was like, I got to get them out of here. I would really like to hear Jackie. I don't know if some Rebe, because I don't know how much leeway she had, but Jackie and Tito talk about Gary because they were like teenagers. Yeah. So they like went to school with people for real. Like, they were like 16, 17 when the group broke, you know, so they really know people from, you know, knew people from Gary back then. But it was interesting. It was just interesting because the first thing I knew this was going to be a doc that was going to be different is when they're riding in Gary and she's talking about, you know, she hasn't been back. And she says, oh, look at that. And she has the documentary and turn the camera around. And she sees this mural on the wall of the Jackson 5. And she just gets so emotional. She starts crying. And I took it as, she's crying. She said, oh, it's so sweet. But I took it as she was like, what happened? like all the years of things that have happened to them. Yeah. And I think it just kind of came down on her, like
just reflecting on just like a much simpler time.
Exactly. And that to me, that was an underlying theme in the doc, especially in regards to her and Michael. Like it was like, mm-hmm. it was a much simpler time. Like we were just Michael, Randy, and Janet. We just was brothers and sisters. And like, what the fuck happened, you know? But y'all, I don't want to, you know, I want y'all to talk too soon about the first part of the doc, and we'll get into some more parts of the first part. But what'd y'all think?
I just thought it was excellent. The amount of access that she gave us with all of the older footage, just being super candid about what even went on, and even showing the relationship between like her and Randy now and how they're still really close. Mm-hmm. It was like heartbreaking, but also very heartwarming, and like just full of, she's a type of resilient that I don't see in like female artists or really anybody in the business these days. Like that is, she's just incredible to me. Yeah.
What do you think, bro?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I knew that her and Randy were like super close, mm-hmm. in that way. So that wasn't a surprise to me. Seeing who they got from the family to sit down for the doc, I thought was very interesting.
Me too.
I mean, listen, when you have 8 siblings, you are not going to be close with 8 siblings.
Yeah, it's going to be somebody who go left. It's going to be
you go, and there's such an age gap between the older siblings and the youngest one, which is her, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, Jackie, he's in the street. He's like 18. He's like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
15, 16, you know what I'm saying?
Because yeah, so, Rebe said it was 16 years between her and Janet. She's the oldest. Yeah, so they were teenagers. Yeah,
and those elder siblings were like getting married when Janet was like in grade school.
But I thought it was interesting in that we often don't really think about what that dynamic is when your family is so popular.
Yeah.
Like that is just not, and we talk about popularity and we talk about people being famous and things of that nature, and when you really watch the footage, you really, you know, it really takes you back to be like, wow, like this is pandemonium type level shit happening. So I thought that was really interesting, and I just thought that the doc was really kind of well done. I don't think the doc is I was surprised to see her give as much as she gave, mm-hmm. even though I know that there are lots of people who felt like she could have given more. That's just the nature of people.
Yeah, they always just, feel
like they're entitled to more than what you're willing to give. But no one has been that raw of that level of fame.
True.
I can't think of anyone with that level of fame that has been that open and that honest and that sort of exposed emotionally.
Yeah, because she didn't, because she had to be, you know.
Yeah, even saying that she didn't want to be a singer.
I was gonna touch on that.
Yeah, that's in the first part, right? Where
she wanted to be a lawyer. She
just wanted to be a lawyer. We're gonna go on stage, and
Joe
what?
Was like, "Nah." She was like, "I was gonna go to." She, you know, and I remember, I remember she actually, I don't know if she graduated, but at some point she actually did go to Pepperdine. She like, I think maybe around the Different Strokes era, like she went for like a year or something. I don't think she graduated, but she did go to school. But she wanted to be a lawyer. She didn't even want to be in the air quotes family business. And Joe was like, nope. And because remember she made a joke. He said, what parent doesn't want their kid to go to college? And Joe was like, nah, you're going to sing. And like Sean said, some of the early footage, like we see her do her premiere, her and Randy do their premiere performance on a Merv Griffin show. And she's like she's tiny, man. She's like 6 years old, 7 years old.
Seven,
you know,
yeah.
So literally all her life, this is what she knew. And she talks about kind of getting into the, and the craziness of this 7 to 8 year old girl doing this, you know, this kind of what they now call a residency, the Jackson's Review in Vegas, and her life, like watching, you know, the strippers and, you know, watching, you know, kind of going, watching shows with, you know, her and Randy's and Michael sneaking backstage to watch all these shows. And just kind of, she was like, yeah, that was my life. I was like a child and I'm watching, you know, topless women dancing. And that's just what it was. Another underlying factor, and we'll get a little, talk about a couple more things in part one, but another underlying factor was Randy, Michael, Randy, Janet, even Tito made it clear that this wouldn't happen if it wasn't for Mr. Joe. Like, yeah. And this is what it, like, he had a plan. They were like, and Randy was like, oh, I didn't understand. Like, why can't I go outside and play? And why is he so stern? And why is he so mean? But he, you know, he had a plan. And I tweeted, hey, man, like, Mr. Joe probably was, he died at 89, right? So Mr. Joe was probably born in the late 20s. And yeah. I don't know where he's born. I know Miss Catherine's from Alabama. I don't know where Mr. Joe's from, but like wherever he's from, it don't matter. A black man born in 1929 in America was rough. And he had a rough upbringing. Yeah. And he worked
off the heels of that Great Depression.
Yeah. And he worked in a steel mill.
Just like, can you imagine? Think of the hardest work
from Arkansas
that you can imagine.
And Mr. Joe from Arkansas. Shit, come on now.
Think of the hardest work you've ever done in your life. And the conditions that you did it in. And now add 50 layers of soot and steel and burning metal on top of that. And that's
and racism
every single day.
And racism.
And then you come home and there's at least 5 children.
And Tito done fucked up your guitar.
Word.
Your only piece.
Because Mr. Joe, Randy, who was it? Janet said she, one memory she did have was, when the boys would go outside and play and they would see Mr. Joe's car come down the street, they would run inside the house because Mr. Joe didn't allow them to come outside, really. You know, because he was scared of the gangs and the drugs and everything in the neighborhood taking one of his kids. And, you know, to his credit, he had 9 kids. None of them got taken. Nobody was on drugs. Nobody got locked up. Nobody, you know, went wayward, you know. And they just kept making sure to like make sure that people understand like this.
I think that they understand the what people think about him.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that they recognize that he was. Here's my issue about how people view Joe, and particularly men of that era, is that they really don't judge their behavior and their moves with the level of context of the period.
Exactly. That's why I brought up the time about when he was born, because you got to put that
in. And I think that, I think it's important that we do that, right? Important to understand that, you know, and particularly it's like interesting, right? Like, especially like in the last 2 years, like we've seen people talk about how they are bugging out about being in the house and now I'm up under my wife now, I gotta do shit. I gotta pay attention to my kids.
Yeah.
I'm like, nigga, he was in like 700 square feet with 11 motherfuckers. Like, could you imagine?
One bathroom.
Fam. This is what I thought about. Imagine a gallon of milk getting put into that refrigerator at 8 a.m. in the morning. I know that gallon ain't making it past noon. It ain't. If they just took the smallest increment of milk, each of them is gone. I can't imagine.
I thought about being pregnant and cooking 3 meals a day for 11 people and like sewing in between.
Yeah.
I don't know how they made our grandmothers, but that fabric is not over here. I am not capable of those things.
Some of y'all gonna be naked. You know?
Yeah, it was interesting. And it was also, what I loved was that they did show them enjoying themselves.
Yes.
And
yes.
Having a good time.
Them whole movies. Movies.
Yes. Uh-huh. I think that they purposefully did that to show that my dad, and she said this, you know, discipline without love is tyranny. And like my dad was not a tyrant. He loved us. Yeah. And while his methods might not be you know, what we would consider, you know, good today, they were for us in yes. the time.
Yes. It was on her. Merv Griffin couldn't even like, okay, don't cry. Couldn't even like make up a fake punishment for Mike. He was like, make him take out the trash.
Or yeah, make him take out the trash.
Whooping their ass.
Don't give him money to spend, you know. Yeah, so the first part was, I'm trying to think if there's any other parts to talk about. I mean, there's so much to talk about. Was the now the part of Fame and all that, was that part one or part two?
I feel like that was the beginning of part two, maybe.
Okay. So part one, I'm trying to think of anything else in part one. To this, I mean, there's obviously tons of stuff.
I don't remember her on Fame at all.
Really?
I have no. If someone had said to me, "You're going to win $3 billion if you can tell me the other show that Janet Jackson was on, other than Different Strokes,"
you'd have walked away.
I would have lost that.
You would have lost that.
If you asked me what was she on other than Good Times, I would have drawn a blank.
Well, I think was Good Times part one?
Yeah, Good Times was part one because she was still. Yeah. Young,
yeah, and they talked about that. About she was on the Dinosaur Show, and she was like, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna play Penny." And then, you know, they ended up Norman Lear and stuff, and they showed the part that everybody remembers, which is Ken Fields' mom played Penny's mom, and she was this abusive mother, and she burned Penny with a hot iron. And if you notice, when Penny. The first introduction scene, the Penny came in looking for JJ, she had a Band-Aid on her head. So they kind of, you know, set that up to be like she was being abused all the time. And I tweeted like, you know, people kind of thought I was joking, but I really wasn't. I was like, you know, when Penny got burned with the iron, like that was like a crazy traumatic part of Black life at that point. Like that was a big, because man, we only had 3-4 channels. Everybody was watching Good Times. Yeah. So when she got burned, that was like a big thing.
It's a cultural touch point, especially for Black America, right? Like we know, you can reference Penny and Iron, and everyone knows.
Everyone knows what it is. Yes, they talked about her acting, and they showed her her early recording, and how she hates those records. She said, "You know, those weren't her records; those were their records." Talking about her father and the record company. She was on the A&M Records at the time. And how she just really had she couldn't pick her album cover. Her father was managing her, and he did everything, especially the boys had fired Joe by that point. So Joe took all his energy and put it into Janet and said, you know, told the people that work for him, she's going to be bigger than the boys, bigger than Michael. He wasn't really that far off long run. And so like she would talk about how frustrated she was at that point. They also talked about, which I had never heard, when they moved to California, the racism in Encino, and how I had never heard them talk. They always made it seem like, oh, this is great. But they never talked about the racism in Encino, how there was a petition to get the Jacksons to move out the neighborhood.
Yeah, which is insane.
Which is insane. Like, it's the Jackson 5. And they're like, we don't care. We want these niggas out of here. And then part one kind of ended with her talking about how she had to fire her dad in order to make the leap musically.
I think it was also interesting. I have to think about, man, you know, those albums were really a waste, right? Because they go against her, you know, the album she has to deliver, and they really go nowhere.
Yeah, they go nowhere. Yeah. They do nothing. There's a couple like minor hits, but it's nothing memorable. And
I'd have to imagine someone with that level of experience, because by that time, I mean, she's really in show business a good, 10 years at that point. So she's kind of growing into her own. She's becoming a young woman. I'm sure also having, being the baby a lot of times, man, it means you kind of deal with shit that's really above your age.
Yeah.
Like quite often and quite frequent. And so I'm sure she was like, I don't really want to do that. And just, you know, sort of being stifled and being hampered and still dealing with just being in the shadows of your brother. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure it was a little difficult for her during that period, because you're at home and your sisters are grown and out of the house.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of alliances you can have.
Yeah. So that was part one. We'll get into part two in a few minutes. I wanted to just mention. I guess I want to mention Euphoria. Did you watch Inca?
I did. What is going on?
Yeah, that was last night's episode. I was like, I literally was saying that I was watching. Like, what is happening? Like, what's happening here? It's a lot happening. Like, it's. But it's weird. Last night's episode was very weird. Very weird.
I don't like this new guy that they're in this throuple with.
Elliot.
Yeah, I don't like him. I don't like anybody that's going to knowingly, like, stop the car and let me out in the street.
I'll go on the highway.
I'm high and drunk on the highway, like, in the middle of the night. What the? And also, I know we say this every week, but, like, where are the parents?
Yeah.
How are they just spending the night at Elliot's house and taking a shower and all that? Like,
we see Elliot's parents.
Elliot belong to?
Yeah, we ain't seen his parents at all. We ain't seen no parents. And then again, we've seen Rue's dad, but like these kids have, I mean, not Rue, Jules' dad, but these kids have so much leeway.
So much freedom.
They just be outside, just like all spending the night here and da 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 da. It's like, really? Like, nobody's moms be like, bring your ass home. Like, what the fuck is he doing? You know,
Cal's storyline is wild.
Wow! No, just sidebar before we get to Cal. I listened to a podcast, so this kind of makes sense. So, the cat character, that actress had beef with where they were taking Cat.
Yeah.
So Sam Levinson was like, "Word, cool," and he cut like 75% of her story, which is why Kat ain't really doing shit this season. So to make up that's why we're getting so much of the Elliot, so much of the Cal, that they're making up the time, which would have been a part with Kat. Now Kat's just like there half the time. She ain't doing shit.
There's been some buzz about a lot of the cast kind of beefing with the amount of nudity that he was expecting from these characters that were supposed to be teenagers. And Kat might have been the most vocal about it. Yeah. Zendaya has written it into her contract, a no nudity clause, period.
Yeah, which is why you never see her.
Which is why you never see her completely naked. But I think we have seen all of the other girls, at least their boobs, or just very, very, very scantily clad, like Kat was.
And very sexual.
And very sexual. I don't know. This episode was just interesting to me. I mean, God bless to Sydney Sweeney. She is doing an incredible job with the character of Cassie. But I don't know what the fuck that storyline is. Like, what is Cassie doing?
And where's it going? And what do you think about
Nate? Doesn't seem as dangerous either this season.
Yes.
But maybe that's just in juxtaposition with his dad. Because that nigga's crazy.
And also, I was wondering, like, we maybe have it off camera, but we didn't see anybody ask Cal, why is your head bandaged? Like, what happened?
Oh, yeah. Man? But I feel like in that house, they don't really talk about anything.
Yeah. You know what else I know about this show? The show's like Belly. Nobody turns the lights on. So it's dark in the crib. It's like, nigga, turn the lights on.
It's much darker this season.
It's mad dark in the crib all the time. It's like, nigga, turn the light on.
Last season was super bright and, still gritty, but like.
Everybody's house is mad dark. It's like shadowy. It's like, nigga, just even the birthday party. It was like, turn the fucking light on. It's a party. You know what I'm saying?
You want him to bring out the cake.
Yeah, it's all dark. It's all dark and shit. But yeah, last night's episode was weird. This is only episode 4, so we got like at least 6 more to go.
I feel like we've been through like 8 episodes worth of trauma.
It's a very stressful watch.
Rue is snorting heroin and has a suitcase full of drugs that she's just using.
And we know that's gonna end up badly.
Super bad news.
Yeah, in the previews for next week, she's back talking to Lori about some stuff. So it sounds like that's about to ramp up too, like with the where's my money type shit, you know?
I'm scared of Lori, personally.
Yeah. Lori's
a terrifying character.
She's cold as ice. She don't give a fuck, you know?
Sean, you not watching?
Nah, that ain't Sean's bag. That ain't Sean's
bag. Absolutely not.
That's why I even asked the nigga. I know he ain't watching that shit. Real quick, I read this interesting article that people floating around last week about streaming and how I think it was 80 or even 90% of the streaming and all the DSPs are catalog music.
The catalog's been going up for 2 years. Hey,
yeah. Yeah, but now it's like 90%, I think.
It was 60. It was 60 coming out of 2000. It was already more than it's been. I mean, out of 2020, it's been more than current since 2020. So I think it's just been growing exponentially.
But it's really like 60 is even lopsided. But like now it's like super lopsided. And so it was a very interesting article because, you know, it was kind of digging into why that is. And first of all, there's, you know, people who just. There's a lot of people
not recording.
Yeah. The music is, in my opinion, I've been yelling this forever, and everybody's been telling me, "Nigga, you tripping? You want some old school shit?" But I think, the music is lacking, bro. Y'all know me. I listen to.
I was about to say, I could swear that we be the people saying that, and you be like, "It's new hot shit." But so no, for you, no, to say but that the music is lacking.
It do be new it's hot shit, but the new hot shit is getting further and fewer between.
Yeah,
it's like be some new hot shit, and then I don't hear no new hot shit for like 3 months.
Yeah, I'm not like a hip hop mood, and I ended up listening to like Black on Both Sides this morning. Right.
But I'm actually okay with that because I'm excited about, and Jeff, you've been around long enough to, and I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that to your experience. It feels like we're going back to a people are revisiting catalogs. Some people that they never lived with this catalog before, right? So I think about Aaliyah last year. There were grown people who had never heard an Aaliyah album in sequence, top to bottom. Mm-hmm. So, and streaming has never really lent itself to like live with an album. So I think part of that is people rediscovering, because there does seem to be finally with sampling coming back, there's a wave of people going back to rediscover old music. I think that all these catalog sales are spiking listeners' curiosities, and a lot of it is comfort based, I think.
Of course.
Being in a time of unknown. But I also think that I could be wrong, but it feels like there haven't been as many, for various reasons, whether it's, COVID or complications, there haven't been as many big music releases over the past couple of years.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely a COVID thing, because people couldn't tour. You know, they couldn't support their records. So they were holding. Right.
Yeah.
But also, I've been saying this for years. Like, listen, the top people in whatever genre, right? So we'll talk about, I'll name four or five, right? So you got Drake, Billie Eilish, Weeknd, Taylor Swift, just for sake of conversation, right? They still approach it the air quotes old school way. They take their time writing songs.
Well, not Drake. I would say everybody there except Drake.
No, Drake does too. Drake
is still kind of on some mixtape shit to me.
Yeah, but you know what was interesting back in the day, which is like 5-6 years ago, mixtapes always felt like a lot of mixtapes felt like they were always better than the actual album.
Right.
Because again, it was a more like relaxed environment to make your music. It wasn't like, I'm on a budget, I gotta get this done. It was just kind of, you were just doing it, flowing. But the bottom line is the people, you know, Frank Ocean and, you know, whoever, they take their time making their records. The mixes sound great. They sequence their records properly, and so on and so on. So you'll get like the Billie Eilish record, or even Bruno.
Bruno taking so long with Sonic.
Yeah, because that's what he knows. Whereas everything else now is so cookie cutter and fast food. So like my analogy has been, we've been getting fed junk food. So like for years we've been like, this shit tastes good. Y'all, I'm eating McDonald's every day. It's Shake Shack and burgers and chips. This shit tastes good. They say, but now we're sick. Because all we've been eating is fucking junk food for years. And so when we get a proper meal, like I said, like a Billie Eilish or like a Frank Ocean or whoever, it's like, man, Rihanna, it's like, damn, this shit tastes good. Yeah, because somebody took their time making it. And that's my analogy. So like you said, I'm hoping that will go, you know, the labels are a big part of it. And they talked about it in Article 2, how about streaming, and it was just fast money, and just sign this, and put out some shit, no artist development. We've been saying
that, like, because I would say that it's one of the reasons why I left the building, is like, I don't give a fuck about putting all this effort into a single artist.
who like, might not be here in 2 months, like literally in a couple months.
Why am I busting my ass to try to get to know, form a relationship with, like, do all the psychology on, you know, because like working an artist from the inside, if you want to do a good job, there's a lot that goes into that.
Absolutely.
Emotionally, fucking time wise. And you know, what are you going to say, Sean?
My input is a lot of these niggas don't want to be musicians. They just want to get rich.
Oh, absolutely.
Music have become the vehicle to become rich and famous.
Yep.
And I think that So there is not an appreciation or an understanding of what that means, right? It's why, and I'm not saying this to go off on a tangent, but it's why people think that Quincy Jones doesn't become Quincy Jones until
Michael Jackson, right?
Right? Like this is that sort of lack of sort of history, knowledge, appreciation, understanding, respect. And, you know, listen, this isn't a lecture. You know, kids get to do whatever, every generation gets to do whatever they want. But I think that that's why you see what you see, right? Mm-hmm. Like there was a level of, and I'm just going to use rap, for example, right? Like there was a level of respect for those previous generations. There was a level of, wow, this is like my hero and I'd love to be able to work with them. And now it's more or less like, fuck all them niggas and I'm getting all the money and whatever. Yeah. Suck my dick. Like yeah, that's literally on a song somewhere. I'm 100% sure that is on
definitely, I'm getting money and suck my dick. That's in the song.
Yeah.
As a layperson, to qualify the numbers that you said at the beginning when you were talking about the article, you're saying we're listening to 90% more
catalog like,
things that have been re-released versus...
Yes.
People are digging into
Stevie Wonder and Michael
Jackson.
But wait.
I want to clarify. Catalog by music industry standards means 18 months or older.
Okay.
So it doesn't necessarily mean 20 years. It means 18 months.
But the article kind of leaned on the fact that it wasn't like, it was.
No, I'm sure it's really kind
of. I know it was the older stuff, like the Beatles or Led Zeppelin or the Stones or David Bowie. Like people are like leaning into that a lot. And let me say one more thing. They were saying that even kids are leaning into that.
I think TikTok is driving some of that too. But I just wanted to clarify for people that basically, if you're listening to something that came out before we went into the pandemic, that's catalog.
Okay.
And I also think we need to recognize that it is easier to access that.
Yeah.
Right. If I want to access an old Stevie Wonder record, right, I'm no longer going to search in a CD box at my mother's house.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm two clicks away from everything, and the ability to do that, the ability, particularly with working from home, has allowed people to stream in the background. They can stream all day. You know, eventually what'll happen is everyone, every app has AI. So they kind of pick up. Mm-hmm. It's why on my random playlist, nigga, you might get some Bobby Blue Bland because I play Johnny Taylor.
Mm-hmm. It's gonna push you in that direction.
And then Candy Liquor come on. Yeah, I'm an old nigga, and that's what it is.
Candy Liquor. He was on Jive.
Of course he was.
Yes, he was on
Jive. I'd just be waiting for Jeff to say he was on Jive.
He was on Jive. What's Buddy Guy was on Jive.
Jive. Oh, okay,
A label called Silvertone, and we had like some blues artists and stuff in there. Angie Bofield was on Jive for a minute.
But I think what's interesting here is that what they're saying is that we're not necessarily consuming new music in real time. Yeah. And I think that is multiple reasons. It's not just that the artists aren't putting out great music or music for our generation, because young kids also have access to this. They also have iPhones and iClouds and digital ways for them to, they're not listening to this.
Right.
And that
was interesting thing about two interesting things about the article I found was that the fact that they pointed out that how many young kids are going back listening to older music and not tripping on the new music, and how that is reflected is there was a graph with the arc of the Grammy ratings,
mm-hmm.
and it was like they had like a 40% share or something, I think, in 2012. And now they're down like the 8.8. No, 40 million. Oh, yeah, no, 40 million. And now they're down. Last year was 8.8. Like, the and shit is like a roller coaster.
It's
like,
and also, and last thing I'll say is, it's too frequent. The music is too frequent. It is very difficult to keep up with the frequency at which music, you know, is released. You don't really get a chance to enjoy an album. I have to say, radio also plays a part in this, because radio was no longer a part of many people's lives and everyday culture the way it was even 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, I get in the car right now and I go to a podcast or I go to a playlist. I am not turning on Hot 97. I'm not turning on 105.
Nobody is.
I was going to say that two things that I've noticed, you know, we were overdue for kind of like a reach back cycle, a retro cycle. We're like 10 years late on it, actually. The same way we hit it in the 2000s, the same way we hit it in the early 90s.
Yeah. It's usually every 20 years you go back. Yeah. You go back 20 years.
Yeah, it felt like it had been like every decade for a minute. So I felt like we were a little late. But I think that a couple things have happened. We don't have soundtracks anymore, which used to encourage, it's Washington Heights, which used to send a lot of us to old classics because you have old school joints on soundtrack.
True.
But the music supervision in shows that people are watching is putting people on. Not only did just for a minute, it was like all the new vibey shit. But now, like even Euphoria last night, there was like Salt and Pepper in it. You know what I'm saying? So there's like, I'm hearing
Montel Jordan. They played Montel Jordan.
Yeah, there was a lot of 90s shit. There was 80s shit. There was late 80s stuff. So I'm hearing a lot more of a mix of older music. And whereas for a long time, I felt like we would just hear older rock in TV shows, you know what I mean? Like Skynyrd and, you know, stuff like that. Like, everybody want to play Freebird, whatever. But now, like, I think we're hearing older music placements of the past 20, 30 years. The sampling is back at radio. And I think that kids are maybe in part because of the also millennials are now at an age where they want to live with stuff a little bit more. Meanwhile, Xers are increasingly moving over to streaming. That's been happening, actually. Mm-hmm. It seems counter that we be getting older and converting more, but we're actually we're becoming a larger part of the streaming audience, Xers are. So I think it's a few things happening at once. But I also think that labels have been watching this, and it's much cheaper to go back to your catalog and go back and say, maybe we need to start doing them compilations again. Maybe we
because it's free money.
Exactly. So I think some labels are shifting their energies towards catalog instead of towards, let me sign something new, let me change. Because I can't remember the last time I heard some announcement about some new artist, new deal, not from a major, you know, indie people. Yeah, but I just think, I think there's a few different conversions. But I'm not really mad at it because...
I'm not mad at all.
I'm not mad. First of all, I think, you know my ass. I'm all about music discovery. And digital, to me, killed legacy artists. Because think about it. People used to drop best of albums like every 5 years. So if you were new to this, you would get that. Like the first Luther album I ever bought for myself was Best of Luther, Best of Love. Best double CD in the fucking world, right? Mm-hmm. Had Best of Isley's, Prince, Best of Prince with those B-sides. It's one of the best compilations. Jimmy and Terry. Like, you know, like used to, but they used to drop those every couple of years. So if you're new to the act, you get the old stuff, you catch up. You know, soundtracks, all that. They don't do that anymore. So I'm looking forward to seeing some package, like, you know, 19 whatever year through this year of the best of whatever producer, label, subsidiary, like bring those back. I want those. If it's a playlist, if it's a special edition, if it's a whatever, I'm with it. I'm with all of that. I love the idea of people rediscovering these artists who've kind of gotten lost in the streaming era.
Yeah, when I was at Sony, I worked with Sony has a label called Legacy, which is their catalog stuff. And they pulled me in to work on some of the hip hop releases when I was there. And I actually really enjoyed it.
Was it Anthony?
No, it was Jim Swaffield. Jim Swaffield's the director. Jim, I'm forgetting your last name. He's working.
I don't think he's listening.
Yeah, maybe. He worked at Tommy Boy for years. He's a good, really good dude. Really liked him a lot. and he pulled me in and stuff. And but I liked it because those people actually like, they really like care about music. You know, they take
they
their
care
time.
About all of it. Yeah,
they care about all of it. The artwork. Like, they put a lot of energy into that shit, man. It's real. It's not like they're just not slapsticking shit and throwing it out there. They really, right. like, are really music people, and they really, really are really careful about how they put stuff out. I enjoy doing that. But let's move on. So, Nas, let me explain to you what we're doing. Since the Janet thing was four parts, what I did was I broke it up. So, we already discussed part one. So, we're going to discuss part two, and then we'll talk about some of the topics, part three.
See, I only really remember it by night one and night two, but I'll try to do it like that.
Okay, we well, yeah. So, yeah. So we're going to go part two now, which okay. is the second hour of the first night.
Which started with the Renee footage, right?
Yes. Was that the Renee footage that started it?
Yes.
Yeah, wasn't the last thing she said after part one was something about niggas with drugs?
Yeah, exactly.
But then when she starts part two, I believe she starts with the DeBarge marriage, with the marriage to James.
Yeah, with James. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she talks about how she had to fire, and then the part one also talking about how she had to fire her dad to kind of, right. you know, figure things out for her career. But yeah, they start part two talking about her marriage to James DeBarge, and I have to admit, I was shocked that she went in that in depth. I don't think I've ever heard her talk about it at all.
No, I don't think I've ever heard her talk about it in any real way.
Yeah, she Which, really like way, went in.
I know I'm late to this. The people I keep seeing on the internet who are like, Janet does plenty of interviews. She's talked about all this shit. I'm like, what secret Janet Jackson interviews have you been watching? I ain't never seen Janet talk about her emotions this open. Like,
never. Rolling around on the floor fighting James for some drugs? She ain't never talked about no shit like that before. Being stuck.
She never talked about her wedding day. No, nobody's ever heard this shit.
No. So she talks. She starts talking about how she met James because I guess another one of the Barge brothers was
it was Bobby and LaToya. That one that I knew.
Oh, so Bobby was
sweet on LaToya. With LaToya on the phone. Yeah. So you know how you do? You be like, let me put my little brother on the phone for you. On the phone, shit. That shit.
They linked up and they, you know, they started to, you know, become friends. They started to date. James says something in that whatever interview that was that he did. I don't know how recent it was, but he says something.
It looked like the '90s because it looked very Donnell Jones where I want to be.
Did, with it the, like, the tango like, and them, yeah, damn, like, them maybe sunglasses.
Yeah.
He says some shit that was so key that I think most people kind of missed. He was like,
I don't know why anybody would trust me.
Yes, I was like, that nigga just told you who he was. He was like, yeah, you know, she had to build up, and she ended up telling me a lot of things, I'm sure, about whatever's happening in the family. And he was like, she trusted me. I don't know why anybody would trust me. I was like,
I'm going to tell you something. Wow. The messy-ass family. The DeBarges are the ones who started that rumor about a baby.
Oh, they did?
Because she left him so suddenly. It seemed so sudden abruptly. To him. Okay. Yeah. So they started this rumor about the baby.
That nigga didn't come home on the wedding night.
That's why I think why her answer was... Why her answer wasn't, I didn't have a baby. Her answer was, I would never keep a baby away from James.
James, yeah.
Because the DeBarges are the ones who started that shit.
You know, and just real quick, let me just say, when she said that, the Grand Rapids story, it made me think about that Good Times episode when JJ was dating Debbie Allen and she was a junkie.
Right.
Remember they went away to get married and she jumped out the window? I was like, wow, she just brought that back to me. Besides,
also, which by the way,
you never saw that episode, Inca?
Did y'all
JJ was dating.
That was mad late in the series, right?
No.
It was maybe season three or something like that.
So Debbie Allen, the Evans and Debbie Allen's family were close friends. And so JJ and Debbie Allen were dating. Debbie Allen, you know, she was young and very cute, and she was bubbly and public, but she kept, like, you know, kind of disappearing into the bathroom, and she would, you know, it's like, what the hell's going on? And so JJ was going to marry her, and they were all like, you ain't getting married, you're too young, and da-da-da. So I think it was on their prom night, actually. They snuck away, and they ended up in this hotel room, and Debbie Allen kind of bugged out on him because she was jonesing for a fix. And he was like, what's wrong with you? And so she was like, JJ, I'm going to go to the bathroom. And so they're calling them on the phone, like, where are you at? Where you at? Where you at? And JJ's like, nah, Ma, we getting married. And he's like, right. And he's,
I feel like they never show this one in syndication. Because I haven't seen, I forgot about it until you brought it up.
Yeah, and then JJ, they like, where is, I forget her name now. Where is she?
Diana.
And she's in the Diana, she's in the bathroom. And JJ goes to the bathroom. And Thelma's the one who tells her she's a junkie. Thelma finds the shit that you squeeze your arm with. And she's like, Ma, she's a junkie. And so they're all worried. And so JJ,
she did it like that.
Yeah, really. She did it like that. So she goes to JJ goes to the bathroom and Debbie Allen has the windows open and she's gone.
A very special episode for your ass.
Yes.
Wow. It was an intense episode. Intense. But I'm sorry to take us off track, but
thank you, Papa.
When they told me when she said they got married, and they were in Grand Rapids, and I thought about the years that they would have gotten married, I was like, oh, he was high as giraffe pussy. He was gone.
Lying.
Grand Rapids is, God bless.
As soon as he said that, he said, I'll be right back. I was like, of course, he went to get a fix.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He going to get right. But also, I think it has been, a lot of them, like, they, listen, I think when they were getting high, like, they would try to use that sort of stuff, and he would do interviews like that and things like that. But I think by and large, when they were sober and sort of using a rational brain, you really realize that, you know, she was young, he was young. She didn't know what she was getting into at what, 20 years old? He thinks he's got his drugs shit under control.
Yeah, I don't think she's even that old.
Yeah, so whatever. Yeah, so like, and he's not much older, right? So of course you think you got all of this shit under control, and until you leave your, you know, new wife to be in a fucking hotel room in Grand Rapids, and don't come back for a day, right? Like, I mean, you know. So I thought it was, you know, she mentioned that she likes to sort of, I like to call it kick puppy syndrome, where they just kind of like always need to help someone.
Yeah.
They just kind of always need to pick someone up and brush them off and kind of take care of them. And that is a thing for them internally. And I think she sensed that.
Yeah.
And I think he was a little, because like you said earlier, like the boys, but, you know, her brothers, they were not druggies, right? So that was a very foreign, that was not something that was used to, she wouldn't have been able to necessarily see that immediately.
And the
DeBarges had been getting high all of their life.
Yes.
Literally.
Yeah, so they knew how to hide that shit. They knew how to move and around. That was just a part of growing up for them. So it was just very, very interesting to sort of see that dynamic and to see the handshake, her world when Mike gave that nigga the, I mean, my sister like you handshake.
Yeah,
you know, like, I mean, I guess, nigga.
Right. Like, we ain't gonna be doing no records together, none of that shit. Then. What's up, nigga?
Yeah,
whatever. Yeah. I want to ask y'all, what did y'all think? Oh, by the way, peace to David Bowie for offering Randy and Mike some cocaine at their crib.
I mean,
that was so funny. Listen, you come to someone's home.
You offer them.
Like,
you bring a bottle, right? That was the equivalent to bringing a bottle, right? You bring a bottle of wine now, you bring a bottle of scotch or something. You know what I'm saying? You wanted to know if they wanted a hit.
Yeah, listen, the 70s and early 80s seems like the wildest of times. And I'm kind of sad that I missed a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Because so y'all tell some incredible stories.
What did y'all think about Janet being so still emotional when she talked about the whole James thing? She was much more emotional talking about that to me than talking about Renee.
Well, because I think it's fuck Renee, right?
Renee
hurt her. Like, Renee was emotionally abusive.
Yes.
James, I think for her, it was two things. I think A, she was probably hurt because she saw, like, the DeBarge family is legit. That is a haunted, troubled family.
Yeah, their father.
So there is probably partially, I think part of what we might have been seeing is, like, some emotion that is just about that connectivity of, like, we both come from these families with this fucked up shit. you know, this fucked up parental dynamic and carrying stuff with us, even though it's very different stuff. And I think, you know, but I was struck by what she was saying, like how innocent she was. I think she might have also just been crying for herself a little bit, just kind of like, y'all was really, I really had no idea what I was
doing. I really didn't know what I was
doing. I think that's
what I got. She put the ring on the wrong finger when she got married.
That's what I got. I was so naive. I was so young. We just were, you know, we were probably, and I got the sense they were doing this a lot out of rebellion.
Yes.
He was probably doing this slightly out of rebellion and also some level of manipulation, right, with the family. Yeah. And, you know, and I think it was just like, you know, just kind of hearkening back to the times when you may have just not made the best decisions and being in this situation where you're trying to save someone. Like the idea that Janet Jackson is driving around in LA looking for someone at 3 o'clock in the morning in drug alleys is wild to me.
And because there is no way. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no, like, think about that and think about her brothers. Look at how they're protective of a 55-year-old woman. Could you imagine the idea of thinking that that was occurring?
Yeah. Because you heard Tebow, she was like, I was all right when she got married to her. Things wasn't cool. You know, like, when I heard about this fuck around shit, you know? So let's move on from that. So then another part this goes into is her taking control of her career. She fires, the Control album was part two. Yes. So they talk about her take control of her career and her music, and there's a lot of BTS footage of her working with Jimmy and Terry on music and stuff like that. And they interview Paula Abdul, who still gets very emotional talking about Janet. They had a very close relationship, and I'm assuming they still have a relationship because Paula's in the doc. And her career arc at that point and how she kind of takes control of her career, and the album Control comes out and puts her on stage as a international superstar. And a lot, I remember one thing they talked about, and I remember this, this would never happen today, but she did not tour on the Control album. She waited.
Didn't have enough material. Yeah,
but she was smart, because a lot of people would just push her out there anyway and say, well, do this and do some covers and blah, 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 and do Don't Stop to Get Enough, you know, whatever. They would have just figured it out, but she was in a space where she was like, nah, I'm not going to go out until I have a second album, and then I have a proper show. But what did you guys think about that when they brought Jimmy and Terry in?
Well, first I want to go back. Well, of course I knew Jimmy and Terry were going to be there. I love seeing her and Terry argue, and it was so interesting to see what an argument from Janet looks like. Because you have to be like, it's mad.
So sweet.
No, guys. No, what, Terry? No, what, Jimmy?
This is too much.
But I can also tell that there had definitely been, I feel like one of these niggas was irritated by Renee. I think that was part of it. Because even Renee was
Jimmy,
like, yo,
Jimmy was irritated by Renee from the gate. Yeah. Because if you remember, Jimmy was taking him from the airport, and Renee had that camera in his face.
Yep.
And Jimmy was already, Jimmy was already like, this nigga with this fucking camera. You could see it.
I could tell. And I could tell, because when Terry was like, I don't know if people caught it because he was smiling, but when Terry was like, I don't have to deal with this, and walked out, you know what I'm saying? He was like he ain't saying it, but he kind of saying it. And he was like, I believe it. You could tell that there had been some tension, like the whole session. That's why they were laughing. It was that if we don't laugh, we're gonna fuck somebody up.
So absolutely.
That was good. That was interesting to see, because again, you don't really get an opportunity to see even like a Jimmy and a Terry lose their cool. Jimmy's one of the nicest people, and that wasn't a mean anything, by the way. But it was just interesting to really even see them just kind of have some tension. But I was glad to see Paula, because the young fans seem to think Paula and Janet have beef. And I'm like, why would Paula and Janet have beef? So I was happy to see Paula included. Mm-hmm. Shut the fuck up. And I mean, I've been a Janet fan since Control, like diehard. So again, it's not that I didn't know things, but it was really, and I've sat with Jimmy, you know what I'm saying? Like shit like that. So it's not like I didn't know. And they tell these stories all the time. That's the other thing. Like Jimmy and Terry tell these stories all the time. But it was interesting to see the footage, to hear her perspective. I knew there had been some shit where like A&M didn't want Jimmy and Terry, and then her and Jimmy and Terry weren't quite clicking, and A&M was trying to bring another producer. So I wanted to get a little bit more into that. I also thought it was dope to hear even part of a song that didn't make the album.
Mm.
That they were
And the first that was that first version of, was that Rhythm Nation? The first
Rhythm
version,
Nation,
it was a different version.
A different arrangement.
The words is different and everything. Also, I just liked it, and I tweeted this, like that's how you're supposed to produce people.
Right.
Like, you're not doing it right, B. It's all this, again, right. Back to our conversation previous about the new music. Yeah. Like, niggas just throw the beat up. Niggas just say the shit. You off the phone. It doesn't even fucking make sense. And then
also,
it's like,
people don't be in the studio together. This is what you
in the studio together. I'm gonna email you a pack of beats. You're in Atlanta. I'm in LA. Yeah, no. Like, no, nigga, this is how
I got a vibe. You don't do lockouts no more.
And every day ain't gonna be a good day. Some days, niggas, like some days we're gonna chill. We might not even make some jams. We might just listen to music and gossip about, you know, the chicks that I'm fucking or whatever. And some
but you still getting a vibe, but you get ideas. This is how ideas come. All that shit.
And then sometimes you're not gonna do it right, nigga. And I'm gonna tell you that shit sounds like trash, nigga.
Right.
Like, do it again.
Which is why you need that trust, so that when somebody says that, you're not like, well, fuck you, I'm leaving, whatever.
Exactly.
Let
me just say one more thing. Hold your thought. I also liked that they actually were showing that Janet was writing.
Right.
I liked that
and
they
stacking showed, vocals.
But she's writing the songs. Like, Jimmy's holding up the paper like, yeah, she wrote this shit. Like, in her handwriting, this is the song. Not like, you know, she kind of did a line or two. She's an actual writer. But I'm sorry not to cut you off. What are you saying?
No, I was just going to say, no, it's fine. I was just going to say, I did appreciate that too, showing her writing, showing her stacking her vocals, which I think Jimmy did on purpose, because I have heard him say before that he doesn't like the way people dismiss Janet's ability to sing because she's not a heavy singer.
Not Whitney.
Because he was like, I can tell her to do anything. It's kind of like when Michael was telling her, like, sing it like you sing Black Cat. Like, he was like, I can tell her anything. And she can do it, you know, in terms of like pacing, whatever, rhythm, whatever. By the time the Janet album came around, we saw Renee a lot. We would see Renee in BTS. We would see Renee with her. We would see his ass was all in the video. Not really, but he'd be present.
He'd be around.
I didn't realize how deeply involved he was, how early in her career. Because I'm like,
on the creative
I'm
side?
Like, you doing the choreography and you doing the creative and you telling niggas like I'm the extension of Janet and you tell I'm like, oh, I know they hated your ass. Like,
yeah, I remember that.
He was like, when he was actually like, and I understand, like, you got a creative partner. It's one thing to say something like, talking to me is about the same. It's about the same as talking to Janet. We're on the same wavelength. But he was like, no, I'm the extension of Janet. No, you're not. She's Janet. You are not an extension of the principal. You are never an extension of the principal. The principal is the principal. Like, that's it. Your support, you know? So I was already like, oh, he's on some other shit.
But you know, once, and I've seen this happen with many, many artists who have that type of person around them. Once that person starts saying, you got a problem. We got a show. We don't want to do this. We got to talk. Go ahead, bro. Because I know you've seen this too.
Yeah, I would just say that, again, I like to give things a little bit of context for the time period. And I think that she was still, it is not always okay for women to be the bad guy in the room, particularly someone of Janet's caliber and stature, right? They don't often want to be the bad guy. Particularly at that period of time, women did not want to seem bitchy. They did not want to seem aggressive or confrontational in any sort of way. And I often think a lot of that is people will only behave in a way that you have given them the ability and the okay to behave. No one is going to speak on behalf of you in a way that they don't think that you are okay with.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think that oftentimes we see people like Renee, and I'm using Renee as a general person, they act as a barrier so that the principal and the artist are not dealing with the more aggressive or the more confrontational shit.
It's good cop, bad cop. It's good cop, bad cop type.
It's, it, that's, Yes, it's that for sure in a much more lame and simplistic terms. But I also think that it is the equivalent to he was the pit bull that she could let off the leash when needed.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a little harder to get that pit bull back on that chain.
Yeah.
when you've let him off too many times, right?
Yeah.
Like he ain't coming on the first call now.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially when he hopped up on Percocet.
Yeah, yeah.
And listen, my man was in the meeting. He was in the coke meeting.
Yeah, right to him and Janet.
So,
yeah.
Like, I mean, he, you know, so like while I did tweet, he wasn't all in the videos. And listen, I know that there's a lot of revisionist history. So, or let me not say revisionist history. There's a lot of people that remember things differently. Me, myself personally, I do not remember Renee. I remember them dating, but it was never reported or seen as them being a serious couple. It was like, oh, that's kind of like her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Like at this point, you know, she's like, you know, an older woman, like not like,
she's
you know,
grown. An old she's woman, an adult. Yeah.
Grown
yeah.
woman, right? So yeah. like, when we found out about Renee, the reason that everyone was shocked is because nobody thought that that's where they, you know, like that was the level or the extent of their relationship.
Yeah. Also, Renee, I got to say this, though, like, he did do a lot of shit. Like, he really was.
Oh, no, he had a whole vision.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, he was really, like you said, choreographing the things and directing the video. Like, he really was doing. He wasn't just, like, getting money and going shopping. Like, he really was doing shit, but like you know, power corrupts, and so over time, the more power he got, the more corrupt he got. But I don't want people to who are younger who didn't know to think that he was just kind of hanging around. Like he was really,
no, he was doing
rhythm, the Rhythm Nation shit. Like he really was involved with that whole, you know, imagery and but, like you know.
But I do think there is danger in, and I say this as a creative person. In theory, I'm not Janet level it by any means, but like if, let's say that. You know, even if I just had a partner, like a business partner, right? I think that when one person controls too much of the vision, right? Like, if you got to run every, if you have other people who are A-list caliber in these departments, but they can't even move without going through, unless it's like with Beyonce. Beyonce is the control freak, but she is Beyonce. It's her shit, mm-hmm. right? But in a case where it's like a Renee, where it's like you, because I'm positive it was also like a you can't talk to Janet, you gotta talk to me, and I'll talk to
yeah,
Janet.
Yeah, yeah, that's what so it was.
So that type of shit gets held up. I've seen it happen. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So yes, we saw great work on the other side of it, so I'm not mad at that. But even just the fact that like he started taking the camcorder everywhere,
yeah, that was,
I was like, this was nigga has a whole shit.
Yeah, he got a whole lot more footage than we ain't seen. He got a lot of shit.
I feel like we've been seeing it already. I'm sure she got all that shit in the divorce. Like, what
check
need to be?
I would hope
it
so.
It seems to me like, listen, it didn't look like the divorce was amicable at the time. Okay,
He said it wasn't.
Okay, okay.
I said it was not amicable, right? Yeah. Like, there was clearly, like, so, but I am 100% positive that he has been offered every sort of seven-figure deal imaginable to do any sort of tell-all or interview or any of that stuff. He hasn't. We have not heard from him.
Because I think he paid for that to make sure he couldn't. Because he was like, I'm leaving with my money. I remember that. There was a couple
of... Yeah, I mean, and again, like Jeff is saying, like, you know, I don't remember the ins and outs, but it sounds to me like, yeah, like I'm going to leave here like the Denzel clip.
I'm leaving here with something.
Because he put in the work for it. That's the thing, though.
He really did. That's the other part, right? Like he earned it, and people. The difference here is that what we see is, and I'm just using this as an example because this is by no means any shots at anybody. The perception of someone like a Ken Do and Mary
very
versus
different.
The perception of what he did, Renee was doing, and Janet, right? Like someone who was actively involved in the creation of, you know, for making this vision tangible, right? Yeah, making it a real thing. And I think that we, you know, people tend to forget that and just think of it as he was riding on her coattails, And, yeah. you know, listen, I mean, would he have been able to go out and find another muse to do that with? Sure. It would not have been Janet Jackson. Well, Janet, right. Jackson. Like, we know that.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to get one of those. So I want to take about a couple more things. We'll finish the Jackson, the Janet part. I just wanted to mention this Cardi B, Tasha K lawsuit. Tasha K is a big time blogger, video blogger. Yeah, she got like a million subscribers or something. She's pretty big.
I had never heard of this person before. I heard about
a million in the blog space in 2021 isn't considered big.
A million YouTube subscribers ain't a lot.
Not for 2021. Not for what she does. She has a very niche following. I'll say that. She's not as big as like the Shade Room or shit like that. But you know, she has a very niche, because I didn't even hear the bitch until she's talking about I didn't hear her until she was talking about John Gray. And I don't watch her at all. I just know who she is. I've watched her twice.
Yeah. So she lost this lawsuit to Cardi B I've seen the numbers swing from 1 point something. Then I saw something that said 4.8 million. I don't know how this is working, but she lost a lot of seven figure lawsuit to Cardi B for constantly putting out lies on Cardi. And Cardi decided to sue her, take her to court, prove that there were lies. And she was just using Cardi to, you know, gain followers and money. And I'm very curious.
And apparently her dumbass, I had not seen this until just the other day. Not only did she say basically that Cardi could kiss her ass with the cease and desist, because Cardi's people sent her more than one cease and desist, which is why this case was a slam dunk. I don't know why she was playing. Not only did that, but she apparently did a video where she was like, yeah, it was fake. And I knew it was fake. And it still went viral. And what?
That's all I care about. We told them earlier, the clout chasing is at all time high.
How'd you think you were going to go, mama?
Well, good luck with their bank account.
Because that judgment is, I think it's 3.8 in total.
Okay.
It was, I think, 1.3 in lawyer fees, 1.3 in punitive damages, and 1.25 or something like that in the number that she was awarded, that she
was actually suing for.
But you know what? The receiver is going to come.
Yeah.
And the receiver is the person who was in charge of making sure that judgments are paid.
Yeah.
So that Camry, that Town and Country with 125,000 miles.
I got to have
it. Yeah, they coming for that, my nigga. Every solitary asset, and the problem here is that ultimately what happens is that you've basically jeopardized your family's financial future.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like
barring some dumb shit.
But, you know, barring, you know, you fucking hit the lotto, right, for $10 million and you pay out the settlement or whatever, right? Like, you know, barring that, you're basically going to be in this hole for the foreseeable future for your life, right? Yeah, like, I don't know what that's going to mean, you know, credit-wise, because, again, you have an outstanding debt of close to $4 million. I don't know what that means for interest. I don't know what that means for seizing property. Now, if I'm not mistaken, you know, they won't put you out in the street, right? Like, you can't. I'm using the Town and Country thing as a joke, more
so
than
anything. They can seize your bank account, though. It's a judgment.
They can put liens on your account until you come to an agreement. So like if you're making, and I'm just using round numbers, if you make $50,000 a year, right? Like your payments to that debt, it cannot be to where you are homeless and destitute. Like that's not that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But you ain't nobody going to Disney. Okay. Yeah, ain't nobody getting no Mickey Mouse.
You ain't going to Tulum, nigga.
You niggas are definitely going to be gassing up the car, going down I-95,
driving down to
somebody's grandmother,
driving down to Nana House,
down to Nana House in North Carolina, and you niggas are going to the creek. That's about all y'all getting this summer. Word.
And also, she's not going to be able to even generate the same level of revenue with her show, because part of the reason that she had so many viewers because she's so reckless. Mm-hmm. And people are going to be much more willing to say, let me see what she's saying about me. Because now people are going to feel like there's a precedent. Because here's the thing. And I think that part of this about Black bloggers is being messy. There's a reason why Wendy Williams damn near made allegedly a catchphrase by the time she, you know, was on TV, because mm-hmm. she used to say wild shit like that.
Yeah, Starbuck Wild too. There was a
allegedly. Yep. Perez Hilton, who was early to the celebrity blog game, same shit with him. You know, if you have watched this blogger vlogger shit evolve, we went through a place where it went from the Wild Wild West to as people got bigger, they had to be a little more careful with this shit. And it seemed like the dumb stuff, like the media, the media takeout and Sandra Rose was kind of dying down, but Tasha's in that ilk, right? Like, I'm just going to say whatever. So I think there's a lot of people who say really reckless stuff, but it kills me that they feel like, well, I'm too small for the celebrity to need to be bothered with me for what I say. It's like, but you're talking trash about them to make money. Like, exactly. You're earning revenue off. It's not like you just talking to your girl in the hair salon, like, yeah, girl, and then what's up? You are generating income off of talking trash about them. And then you're going to say they shouldn't be bothered to.
Yeah, they shouldn't sue you.
A big part of that has been the culture of lawsuits, right? Because it is a cycle of assessing, as the old heads say, is the juice worth the squeeze?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, is this lawsuit going to justify my time? Now, I will say this. This may not have been a lawsuit if we were not in a pandemic. If we were, if we're talking about someone who is actively in the studio, actively going out, actively touring, it may have been a blimp on their radar. Mm-hmm. But because, I think
Cardi also may have been like, you're gonna keep ignoring me and talking shit, I'm gonna prove a point.
That was the other part is fucking with someone who has liquidity. meaning a motherfucker who can afford to put the dogs on you. Because that 1.3 is about what a lot of those cases cost to go. Like, suing someone is incredibly laborious. It is mm-hmm. wildly
You're charged by the hour.
Bam, the numbers will stagger you if you took a look at billing hours. And this is not like a lawyer trying to rip somebody off. I mean, they're doing the work, right? Like, it just costs a lot of money to do this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I think what people do is like, what is this guy really worth? You know, this guy has a fucking lien for he got a $2,000 lien from New York State on taxes. He ain't got no money, right? Like, that's really, that's what people do. And that is what that culture has bred. People just not going after them because it really wasn't worth it.
It wasn't worth it.
I win a judgment, right? But ultimately what happens is that I'm trying to squeeze water from a rock because there's no assets.
Ain't got no money. What I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
So. I think also for Cardi, it may have been a shot. It may have been a warning shot to anybody else who felt like they didn't want to play around. Like, I will, because, you know, Sis got on the joint. Sis got on Stand and Cry. Like, Cardi was like, nah, we gonna do this all the way.
Yeah.
And I think it was necessary. I think that a lot of these bloggers are nasty. And mean-spirited people, and they think it's cute because people check into the salaciousness and they applaud them, mm-hmm. and they think it's fine. And I think a lot more people need to start suing these motherfuckers. So that's the thing. Like, there's no level of this is a very difficult case to prove. Right, it has to be so black and white.
Yeah, like a slam so dunk. It's gotta be a slam dunk. Yeah. So I'm very curious to see how, like you said, how it's going to affect things moving forward. I just wanted to mention before you finish up, Janet. Very curious to see how this black woman going to the Supreme Court is going to play out. We know it's going to be a bunch of racism, And sadly, it's going to be a bunch of self-hating motherfuckers, too, who are going to have beef with this.
I've seen it already, because this is Clyburn's chick, right? Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, Mr. Jim is why Mr. Joe's in office. Shit, he's all in favor.
For real, though.
And it ain't like this lady is not fucking supremely qualified, pardon the pun. He ain't get it from the fucking Dairy Queen, you know? Right. So, like, let her live. But, you know, niggas, or whatever. I don't even want to get on it.
I just need them to get on it before we get to midterms. And then
I just want somebody to kidnap Mitch and put him in a fucking DC basement so that he can't fuck this up. Yeah. Like, why is that man still here? Forgive me, Laura, but for real, why is he still here?
Seriously.
He done set us back a good 60 years, like, the legit.
My people in Kentucky, y'all got to get this motherfucker out of here, man.
They were very close last time.
I know.
I appreciate the efforts of that.
If they had picked the black guy instead of the white lady, they would have got it.
Yeah.
You know, so, but anyway, let's finish up with Janet. So part three. Part three is what?
What did part three start with?
Starts with that.
Did it start with Velvet Rope?
Yes.
Her moving Velvet into Rope. Like the sexier era.
Yeah, and her getting Velvet sexier. Rope. And her Renee falling apart. And when she was super gully. Like, who knew Renee was on drugs? I didn't know that. You know what I'm saying? I didn't know he was on them perks and all that. So it talks about her, Renee falling apart. And it also talks about Scream.
That was extremely interesting to me.
That was really interesting because, like I said, looking at the video, again, great BTS footage. Great BTS
incredible.
Footage. Incredible. Like, but looking at that footage, I thought they was kicking it together on the set.
Right.
And who knew that they didn't even see each other? And, you know, I believe Michael was playing fucking head games. With Janet, because she was somewhat of a threat at that. Well, she was, because he had to call her to ask her to do a record, because Mike had just gone through a case, so he had.
Yeah. But
get on.
He wasn't playing. That's the thing. I know we were talking about this in the chat, but like, so somebody hit me. I'm gonna back it up a little bit. I don't know what the fuck was going on outside, but somebody hit me last night, and they were like, "Sorry, guys, hold on."
Yay, Washington.
It only happens when I'm on a Zoom. or maybe I just don't notice it otherwise. But somebody hit me last night because they were like, in text, they were like, you know, I feel like if Janet really felt like Michael was guilty of something, she would have said something about it, or she wouldn't have done this, she would have said something about it in the doc. And I was like, well, she said that they had been distant since Thriller, right? Because that's why she was so excited about Scream. She thought they were going to get back to, you know, their brother-sister relationship and kind of mend some fences or whatever. But I was like, you know, who knows how close she was to him at that point? Who knows what you as a sibling can admit to yourself at that point? Mm-hmm. But I was like, to me, because she was like, him coming to her to do Scream and her doing it for him solidifies that, you know, they were good. And I was like, to me, him coming to her to do Scream because he needed it for his image and then treating her like it was business actually mm-hmm. confirms for me that the nigga did do something. Because he was like, yo, I need you. And it's like, all right, good looking out. I ain't even going to talk to you after this. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's just...
Or even at the video.
I'm going to talk to you during this.
Right.
That was crazy.
And let's not forget another part she said when she pulled up on his house in Vegas. She said that they had that one meeting and it was really weird him being out there. But she's like, yo, I'll open for y'all. Like, Janet was constantly, like we said, you missed this part early night in the first part. Janet, one of the underlying themes was, with Michael anyway, was Janet kept just trying to get back to, like, how they used to be. You know, so even with her offering to open for them at that point, she's this mega superstar, she's like, I just want to be with my family. Like, I'll open for y'all, whatever. It's whatever. If y'all need me, I'm here. But Mike, like she kept saying, Mike, there was a shift that happened, and Michael just kept getting further and further away from them, and just, you know, just kind of wasn't. Because even when they wrote Scream, when they showed that footage, which was also great, of them actually writing the record. It was his grandma's apartment. Went on the shit all over the place.
That tablecloth was ridiculous.
nigga had shit everywhere. But it was like, if you just looked at that footage, you think, oh, that was good. That's the big bro, little sis. But they weren't good. They just, you know, she was trying to make it good. But Mike was like, I'm gonna use you for this. But then once we leave out of this, then, you know, I'm going back to whatever the fuck else I'm doing.
I think the thread underneath that, that no one was saying was, this was probably the beginning of Mike's serious drug use too.
Yes, yes.
Which absolutely could have absolutely changed who he was to her and to the rest of the family and his interactions. And like, you don't, he doesn't look like an addict or anything when they're sitting there writing the song together, but it's crazy to me to go from that moment of like, let's collaborate on my kitchen table to, I don't want to talk to you at all during the video shoot in that short amount of time. Like that.
I don't even want you on the set. Yeah, exactly. I don't even want you on the set when I'm there. Like,
that is
what?
Crazy to me. And that we never knew all of this, I think speaks to just how much Janet holds all of them dear to her and like those experiences and like this is really still my family regardless of what y'all think or whatever else is going on. Like, we did the record, he's still my folks, he's still my brother. yeah
I just thought that was just very the Scream thing like really just threw me off. I like you said, I don't think anyone had any, because even the producer was kind of like, yo, I had a good time on the set, right? And she was like, nah, that was really tough. And then and it was like, oh shit, this nigga was tripping.
It broke my heart because it seemed like such a fun moment for them, and it's one of my favorite videos of all time. To know that it, like, behind it is all this really dark fucked up family dynamic shit, is that sucks.
Yeah,
Mike's that's son, really Mike's, hard Mike's, to hear.
Mike was sunning her. Like, I don't give a fuck, you're still my little sister and I'm gonna do whatever the fuck I want to do. I also want to talk, so I want to open up the floor a little bit, talk about the Jermaine era. What did y'all think about that?
I loved it. You know, I was never one of those people that was like, why is Janet with Jermaine? Because what people always miss about certain guys, like, okay, Jermaine's short, you think he looks like whatever, but he's charismatic and he's fun and he's funny. Mm-hmm. And
absolutely. He's a good guy. He's a good dude.
And he ain't shit as a boyfriend, maybe.
At all.
But I've never heard anybody be like, yo, Jermaine, fuck me over. I've never heard. I'm not saying it has. I've not heard that.
All his artists were paid what they were owed.
Right.
You see, they always end up coming back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I appreciate that they still spoke so kindly of one another. You
can
see
the sprinkle
in each other's eyes that was just like, I still love this guy. Like, we can't be together.
Because even when they asked why they broke up, Janet's giggle.
She laughed.
Yeah, it wasn't. And there's a different laugh. It wasn't like a, huh. Let me tell you what this is. It was like, Jermaine. It was like, oh, that Jermaine. So I really genuinely believe they're still friends. As somebody else pointed out, he's the only person she's been involved with the exception of Q-Tip, which was never public, who sat for an interview, and they gave him a lot of time. Like, Jermaine got a lot of time.
Yeah.
And a lot of
BTS footage there too that I've never seen.
Yeah. And part of that was because
weren't they together for like 7 or 8 years though?
Yeah, I didn't even realize it was that long.
He said he was with her longer than her marriages.
Yeah. I don't think I even realized it was that long, but yeah, they were together a long time. And people are speculating they probably back talking. I would not be surprised if Jermaine is not if he's not like a reach back occasionally, like, yo, I'm in Atlanta, because Janet be fucking. Let's just say that. So I know from certain sources whom I trust, but I would not be surprised if, you know, they didn't link back up occasionally. I would not be surprised if he's a confidant of hers when she just
needs he definitely is, some non-Hollywood stuff going on
when she needs some normalcy.
He's what I like to call, that's nigga you get some fried chicken with, right? Like, she just needs some regular, you know, that nigga probably got, like, he got some Cheetos in the crib.
Let's watch some Martin reruns. Why did I get married?
He can go and do the fancy dinners, but he's also gives me
going to Waffle House. Going to Waffle House.
Yes, we're not doing all that shit. Put on a hat. Put your mask on.
Going to jail crickets and getting his wings.
Ain't nobody gonna know it's you. Let's just fucking go and get this food and come back to the crib.
Yeah, but that's what I heard from, like, several people when they were together in Atlanta. Like, that, what you said is literally what would happen. Like, it got to the point where, like, not that people wouldn't trip on seeing Janet, but it became kind of normal. Like, right. Oh, look at Jermaine and Janet. Jermaine and Janet was in Lenox.
He definitely had her outside more than we ever saw her outside.
She was totally outside.
Janet would be in the street chilling. They'd be at, like, we saw Janet a lot during that era. I do remember, and that was when Janet also started doing, like, normal-ass publications and mm-hmm. normal-ass press and media. Yeah. Like, instead of just the superstar
super
shit.
High-end shit, yeah.
Yeah, she was kind of, it was kind of like, you know what it was like?
Sister
it was
to sister.
Yeah, it was like when Prince started going to basketball games and BET Awards, and we were like, what is Prince doing in, like, just
with Dave Chappelle at the game?
Yeah, like, it was like when that happened.
Yeah. And I definitely heard Janet was, like, you know, around.
Maybe it's like regularly. A Burger King or some shit like that.
Yeah. You see Janet, you know, just, like I said, her and Jermaine, like, drove down Peachtree. Oh, I Google Janet.
Right.
Like, that shit. So, but I definitely liked their energy together and their relationship together. And to me, and I could just be tripping or whatever, like, as far as the relationships that they showed, she seemed the happiest. In the footage that they showed with him, with Jermaine, she seems very happy and relaxed.
She has said in the past that, and I have forgotten this until some people said it on Twitter, because I was saying she clearly still has a great affinity for him. She has said in the past that Jermaine was the only boyfriend, was the only partner that she had who didn't criticize her body and instead was actually like, what you talking about? You fine. Like, if she gained weight, lost weight, he's like, nah, be great.
You tripping. You Janet Jackson.
So she said he taught her how to love herself and all the body conscious issues and all of that other stuff. And I also just think, like, the fact I never knew he resigned from the Grammy board.
I didn't either.
That is another thing I didn't know. Level of hold her down. You know what I'm saying?
Let me find out he ride or die.
Yeah, I was like,
cheating.
Okay, Jermaine. Yeah, I was really impressed by that, actually.
Yeah. You know? Another thing I didn't know, like another reveal on this documentary was just like, oh shit. I gotta say before we wrap up. I feel about this topic I'm about to say. Y'all know I love an older Black woman, and I just love Miss Catherine so much with her walker and her boo moo moo. Through the house and Janet doing the
good. She had a good wig on too.
Good wig on. Had a
gorgeous caftan. She was ready.
Bless Miss Catherine Mix. She's been through a lot. You know, lost a boy, lost a husband. Who knows whatever else?
Yeah, it's all kind of turmoil. I'm sure was it with them kids.
Yeah, and with Joe acting a goddamn fool. You know, so
and Pete, bless her heart. Peace to Reby.
Agent
like fine wine out there. I know old Herman. I know old Herman and them niggas be sniffing around.
Hey, man, Reby, how you doing?
What's funny to me about Reby is that I felt like Janet was like, I want you to be candid, but Reby to me felt like she kept scanning her brain. Like, should I answer this question? Should mm-hmm. I answer this question? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I want to tell y'all this. Yeah,
I can imagine having. Damn near, 55 years of experience of having to do that about your family.
Right.
Yeah. In every setting, you have to really process in real time, how am I answering this? Who am I answering this to? Do I even want to engage in this? Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't think that that's something you ever turn off.
Yeah, I don't think, like, Tito didn't give a fuck. Tito was just like, whatever.
If you've ever watched, there was a Jackson reality show. I don't know if A&E has it on their Fox, whatever. If you can find it, watch it. I fucks with Tito. I fucks with Tito heavy. He's a regular
Tito
nigga.
Tito is a nigga from Gary, Indiana. Tito was grown before they moved to LA.
Yeah, we talked about that. Him and Jackie. We talked about that before you kind of was
them like, niggas is from Gary, Indiana. Yeah. Like 100%. Right.
Yeah. They know niggas still there. Like, they know. Yeah, I went to school with that nigga. I talked to him the other day.
Exactly. So, Tito is just like, Tito just showed up, like, all right, what? Okay, ask me a question.
Shaved.
Like, Tito's also the one who, like, went to London and scooped Janet up when he was ready, when she left old boy. So, Tito.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah. So, people were saying, and again, this is where I'd be like, who? Do y'all know who Janet? Because somebody was like, LaToya not being there was surprising. And I was like, LaToya being there would have been surprising. Like, LaToya being in anything Jackson related has been more surprising to me for the last 30 years than LaToya's absence. Like, mm-hmm. What are you talking about? I said, I think she tapped the siblings that she's closest to. And that is Jackie and Tito and Reby. That's who it is.
If you want to talk to.
Yeah, you definitely wasn't going to see Jermaine because Randy's
an EP. You are not going to see Jermaine.
Randy's an EP, there was no way that shit was happening. Randy might have jumped on that. Randy might have showed up and jumped on that nigga.
It was just like little subtle, for lack of a better term, nigga shit that just kept like when Janet at early, I think it was part one, when she was talking about it's a girl, three boys, But then when she went down to names, she fucked the names up. She was like, it's Rebe, Jackie, Tito, Jermaine, Rebe. And then she's like, no. Like it's that
nigga. She went back like, and said, LaToya. Back and fixed,
LaToya. Like, I forgot about my phone.
Right. Cause she was like, that's how I got to remember it. Though you don't fuck with LaToya. Like, just throw a little. I also noticed that Jackie, I need to go back and watch this again. When Jackie was talking to Janet,
Tito.
I mean, no. Who was that? Who was the brother who was in the house with her? It wasn't Tito.
Randy.
It wasn't Jackie. It was Randy. Sorry. So when Randy would be talking to her, she talked a lot about. Yeah, because she talked a lot about her forgiveness of Joe. But he would be like, because I was like, is that a cousin or is that her brother? Because he was like, then your father said. And it wasn't like, I didn't feel like it was one of those stories where every once in a while he'd be like, and then let me tell you what your mother did. It felt like that's what always is like, because all the kids called him Joe. I remember that.
Yeah.
But I feel like for Randy, it was really like, okay, you good with him? I'm still not good with him. That's how it felt to me.
Could be. And I like the footage at the end. They showed him Mr. Joe going to the show, to her show. I guess that wasn't long before he passed. And like, he's still,
Beijing in his eyebrows. Beijing in his eyebrows.
Had his cane, had his suit, had his hat.
Whole head, player.
Whole head black. And then remember, there was a clip where Randy saw him at the show and hugged him. And like, it was obviously a very complicated relationship with the kids and the dad. And even Miss Catherine's like, Joe wouldn't put an extension on the house because he kept buying instruments for the boys. Like,
But one thing I will say, we were all, I think, well, not you, Inca, but the three of us were at Essence with the year that Janet was there, which was right after Joe died. Right?
No. I wasn't there. You and Sean went that year.
Yeah, Sean
went. I went the year after.
So I was actually surprised that Janet had like a real moment to acknowledge Joe on stage. I'm not saying I didn't expect her to say anything. Wait, hold on a second. I'm sorry. I didn't expect her not to say anything, but she had like a whole moment, and it kind of surprised me that she like was that vulnerable and like acknowledged him for that extent of time. But what I got from her in this document was that Janet feels like she's gone through a lot of therapy and has processed this shit, because she seems very at peace. Even the stuff that she's still, you can tell there's hurt, she still seems at peace.
Mm-hmm. Remember, she said she was like, after they showed the clip after he had passed, and she was getting made up for her video, and she said, I'm glad I got to tell him. Like why he when he was sick and what he did, and I understand now what he did and why he did it and how much I love him and how much I get, why I'm here. Like she, like you said, maybe that was a combination of inner, looking inward and therapy. But she definitely was like, I'm kind of like at peace now. Like I talked to him, we had our talk, our talks, and he told me some things that I understand, and I told him how I felt, and we was good, maybe Randy never got to do that.
Right.
Maybe Randy never got to do that. So maybe that's why it's still like this. Your father, your father, because Randy even said, he was like, why is he always so mean? Like he just, overall, though, I just thought the documentary, I was so excited to see it, but it just surprised me on how good it was and how engrossing it was. I really enjoyed it. And I guess we got Bobby Brown coming up next. Which would be interesting to see how.
I'm ready for Bobby.
It looks like Bobby goes deep too with the Whitney thing and all that. Yeah. So we're gonna wrap it up on that note. Wrap it up. I ain't got nothing else to say. Oh, I'll get my booster shot tomorrow. So pray for me.
We'll be in prayer.
He'll be fine.
Lift me up
we
in
didn't
prayer.
Get to hear what you're watching.
Oh, I watched this show on HBO Max called The Search Party. And it's actually just finished its fifth season. And apparently it became kind of like a cult hit at the beginning of quarantine with people mm-hmm. watching it. So it's weird because each series is kind of like this whole, I mean, each season is kind of like this whole different journey. It's a bit of an absurdist kind of friend crew, a bunch of millennials in New York. But it starts with this girl they all went to college with, who they barely knew, goes missing. So there's one of them who's like looking for some meaning in her life. So she feels like she needs to try to, because I guess her feeling is kind of like, oh my God, what if I went missing? Would anybody care? Because when she brings it up at the table, you know, her friends are like, oh my God, I hated her. She was so annoying. And then she's like, she's missing. And then they're like, oh my God, the last time I saw her, it was, you know, like all of a sudden it's a whole, everybody's making it about themselves, whatever. So there's one of the girls goes on this quest to try to find her because she's convinced she's not dead. And it just morphs into like this series of adventure circumstances, you know, all this kind of stuff. So it's funny. And then there's some great guest stars, like Susan Sarandon is a guest star one season. And what's my man, Jeff Goldblum is in the last season. So there's like some really great guests in it. It's really funny at points. It's a little corny at points, but even the corny points are endearing. It's a good binge. And at five seasons, it's a really good binge. So, okay. Right. So The Search Party on HBO Max.
All right. Cool. We're going to wrap it up. Y'all got anything to say? No, y'all ain't got shit to
say. No, it's cold.
Silent niggas. She said it's cold. All right. Cold. That's it. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye.
Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.